between companies or even as friends, you know, you can have conversations, you can share information that might fundamentally be very similar, but how you tell the story, right? What the storytelling is and how you communicate something and through what means you communicate it really makes a big difference in terms of how that information is ultimately received and perceived.
Welcome to the Meaningful Jobs podcast season three. I'm your host, Adrian, and today we're extremely honored to welcome Frederick Carlegrin, who is the VP Head of Marketing and Communications of Toshiba Global Commerce Solutions. So how are you, Frederick? Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, doing great, thanks.
So yeah, thanks so much, you know, for agreeing to this interview, because a lot of our listeners and candidates would really want to know senior decision makers at top companies at a personal level. So, you know, as you know, the head of marketing and communications and, you know, Toshiba Global Commerce Solutions, can you tell us a little bit about your career trajectory? So how you got into marketing and how you came into this position?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, we'll try to not spend the entire podcast on this, but it's been a, not a direct linear path per se, right? I think a lot of times you don't necessarily foresee where you're going to end up. When I went to school in college, I studied psychology and economics. You know,
I mean, it's thinking, not completely unrelated.
Right, exactly. If you combine those two, I think you pretty much have marketing in a nutshell. I just didn't know what to call it back then, right?
Right. I guess you could have pursued a marketing degree, right? Was that?
Yeah, I went to a small school, so it didn't actually have a marketing, marketing option. So it wasn't until I took my first job where I realized that I wasn't quite doing what I felt passionate about. I started taking some night classes in marketing at a nearby university, and then I realized that I wanted to go back to school. So I pursued my MBA in international business and marketing at the Thunderbird School of Global Management. And from there, you know, got into the corporate world and the marketing world, and pursued a number of different opportunities. So, you know, in my case, I've done product marketing, I've done sales as well, got that experience, and then now spent the last several years back in a marketing communications role.
So am I right in saying that it seemed to you that you just didn't know the term marketing, but you've always wanted to be a marketer?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I've always been really interested in the idea of value and what is it that resonates with other people? How do you communicate and, you know, share and talk about the value that we bring, the why, right? A lot of times in marketing, it gets down to the why, not just the what we do. And I think that's always interested me.
So I think a lot of marketers I've spoken to in the podcast, they've maybe taken a bit of a detour before landing into marketing. But I guess, you know, for you, you started in marketing quite early and progressed to the senior position. So was it one of your goals to become, you know, a senior decision maker in a top organization from a young age, or did this just happen gradually, you think?
Yeah, one step at a time.
Right? One step at a time.
You know, you get in a role, you start to learn more, you get a little bit of confidence, and you think, you know, there's some things I might want to do differently, right? Or some ideas that I have that I bring forward, and you take that one step at a time. But in my case, I also did have an opportunity within the companies I worked for to take a couple of different paths, right? So from product marketing, but then I did 4 years in sales. I ran a technical sales team globally, which was, you know, really insightful, right? And coming back to marketing with that sales experience has been not only good at building trust with my sales colleagues, but, you know, really thinking about how are customers going to understand, perceive, and what is it that they need from us as an organization. So it's really, that was incredibly valuable.
So you talked a little bit about being really passionate about the why question, how to communicate vital pieces of information to customers. Can you put your finger on what intrigues you specifically? Why are you interested in communication specifically?
Well, I think, you know, more foundationally, a lot of times between companies or even as friends, you know, you can have conversations, you can share information that might fundamentally be very similar, but how you tell the story, right? What the storytelling is and how you communicate something and through what means you communicate it really makes a big difference in terms of how that information is ultimately received and perceived. And, you know, that's, yeah, so I think that's a really important part to keep in mind in this type of a role, right? Our intentions, no matter how good it is not as important ultimately as how it's perceived and received by those that we really are trying to talk to and communicate with. And, yeah, that's, we got always got to keep that in mind.
So, you know, being so interested in communications, have you thought of pursuing a career in PR entirely? At any stage in your career?
Well, I'm fortunate that I get to spend a lot of time thinking about that and focus on that today too, right?
So I guess being, you know, the VP of marketing isn't too bad an option, I guess.
It's pretty great. You know, I have an opportunity to do quite a lot. My responsibilities here at the Toshiba Global Commerce Solutions, and, you know, it's everything from product marketing, channel marketing, corporate marketing and events, have a technical marketing team as well, and you know, as well as the communication side, both internal and external communication. So not a day goes by that isn't full of excitement and adventures and new things thrown my way.
Well, it's great to see that you still got so much, you know, passion, which I think you need, obviously, in this role, in your work. So I guess a lot of our listeners will also want to understand, you know, about how you came into this position, because there must be career challenges that you faced over the years. So can you tell us maybe a particular incident which felt a big challenge to you at that time and how you navigated through it?
Well, I think one of the biggest challenges in just the last few years was being promoted into the vice president head of marketing role about a month before the COVID pandemic hit. So
wow, good timing, you know, wasn't it?
So the timing was interesting. You know, one of the things obviously that you hope to do is to continue to, you know, build on the relationships you have in the organization, and you know, switching how we did work, how we communicated and collaborated, was something we had to figure out very quickly. And I think that was maybe not a unique thing for me. A lot of us experienced that need to pivot. And, you know, we did. And so, you know, not only did we pivot and perform during COVID, but we also decided to come back quite early on and, you know, get back to that in-office culture. And so we've done that too, and pivoted back and, you know, really rebuilt the essence of what it means to, you know, be together as a team, collaborate, communicate, and really trust that balance of hybrid, which, you know, within office and remote working together. So, you know, those are the kind of, you know, I think the challenges that you think about when you lead an organization more so than very specific functional pieces that the team executes day to day.
You know, so obviously when COVID hits, nobody knew how bad it was. Everybody panicked. Do you still remember how you felt at that time when COVID hit and your immediate reaction to it?
I'm not sure I want to go relive that too much, to be honest, but you know, you do the best you can. My philosophy is, you know, the things you can't control, you simply have to manage. And so, you know, back then, right, we didn't really know how long those working conditions and things and how that was going to progress. And so we had to take one day and one week at a time, and then you settle in and you do the best with what you can.
So I guess, you know, maybe like a more positive, you know, approach to things. So, you know, moving on, talking a little bit about your company. So can you tell us, you know, what it's like working for Toshiba Global Commerce Solutions? Like, what's in it for people to join your company?
Yeah. So, you know, first of all, Toshiba Global Commerce Solutions, you know, we're a global business that is focused on helping our retail clients. So, you know, we are really fortunate that we get to work with 6 of the 10 largest retailers in the U.S., many of the top European retailers, many of the top retailers in Latin America, et cetera. So, you know, we have a global footprint, but working in the retail industry, that's a mission critical industry. We support a lot of their store systems, store technology and solutions. So, when you have that mission critical nature to what we do and why they really depend on us to operate their stores, you know, we certainly, that becomes part of the fabric of who we are and how we respond, you know, with some urgency to our needs of our customers. But, you know, we've also taken a pretty deep look over the last 3 years at our corporate culture, spent a lot of time developing our core values, which, you know, really, because we work in the retail industry, we actually developed them around a We Are Retail acronym. So we focus on a company and a culture that's about respect, empowerment, teamwork, adaptability, integrity, and leadership. And, you know, making those really the foundation for who we want to be as a company.
So I guess the core value that stood out to me was empowerment, because a lot of the younger generations, when they are thinking about which company to work for, they don't just consider about the money and the career prospects. Right. They really want to consider about who they can help and how their company can help train their skill sets. So can you tell us a little bit about what empowerment means in a Toshiba, a global commerce solutions context?
Yeah.
And how can candidates impact the wider society through their role?
Well, I love the question and the focus on that connected to what people are looking for in companies. But, you know, our CEO, Rance Paler, when he came on board 3 years ago, that was central to his thinking, was, you know, a team that feels empowered. And so we have a lot of discussions from, well, that doesn't mean you do whatever you feel like doing, right? But it mm-hmm. means that you have the ability to focus on an outcome, and then you figure out the path to get there, right? You figure out if there's a better or different way with your diverse thinking and what you bring to the table. So, you know, it's just putting information, tools, and support and training into, you know, around our employees, and then let them go solve and drive to the conclusion and the results that we are looking to achieve. And it obviously feels better too, right? It feels better to work in a place where you have that latitude, as opposed to, you know, being told exactly how things need to be done. And it means that we also challenge things. We challenge status quo, right? You know, I frequently like to tell my team that there's really no such thing as something that is, you know, immovable and not changeable. I mean, if you come up with a compelling reason, we're going to always have that conversation. You're empowered to bring ideas forward. So, you know, we really try to work it in, and but it takes, you know, it takes time to really make sure that you talk through and managers are equipped to have those conversations with employees. But it's really important to what we're doing. We were trying to grow our business. You know, we have been growing our business. We want to continue to grow our business. And to do that, decisions can't just be made at the top. They've got to be made at the individual decision maker level, and you got to empower people. And that means you're going to fail too. And we have to be able to be comfortable with the fact that failing once on the path to getting it right and doing something better is okay. Right. And that's
yeah, I love that saying. Yeah. Like, just don't be afraid of failing, right? It's part of the process.
It's part of the process. Exactly.
So, you know, based on what you just said, I feel like there's some sort of startup element to the culture. Am I right in saying this?
Yeah, you are, actually. You know, that's something that we've often said internally amongst ourselves. And, you know, our division and group of Toshiba is about 3,000 employees around the world. And, you know, we have that mentality of being a little bit scrappy. You know, we have a vision. Yeah. We have a clear growth plan. But when it comes to, you know, executing and being nimble, that's also part of the other, you know, one of our core values around adaptability, which is really, we have to be able to move more quickly, right? And mm-hmm. so, and be nimble and get things done that are important to our clients. And so there is a bit of a startup mentality. You know, we've eliminated processes internally that required multiple levels of approvals and things of that nature, really trying to, back to the empowerment, drive decision making down so we can move more quickly. And so that definitely has a bit of a startup feel to it.
Would you say it's a difficult balance to take, though, between maintaining a corporate culture in a big company and having this startup element to it? Like, how do you encourage people to take this balance?
Well, for one, we're extremely consistent in how we talk about our values, how we train our managers, all of our managers, no matter where they are in the world, they come together for, you know, training every year. We're very consistent in how we talk about, you know, our values every month on our all hands calls. We have an employee in the organization nominated to come speak and talk about how they felt empowered in a particular project. So, you know, so there's part of that. There are some structure and things and how we do things as a big company, how we communicate to everybody, but we try to work in and really live by the values that we talk about.
So, you know, going back to what you said earlier about having the opportunity to work with the biggest retailers, if you come work for, you know, Toshiba Global Commerce Solutions. So, you know, for people who are interested in this aspect, can you expand a little bit more about what your brand is all about, the services you provide, and what it means to work with big retailers?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, depending on where you are in the world, the retail names will be different. But, you know, you think about the largest grocery stores or big box retailers, convenience store retailers that you have around you, there's a good chance that they are a customer of ours. And so, you know, one of the ways that you'll know if you go into the store and shop at the point of sale and checkout registers, you'll likely see a Toshiba logo on that equipment. That's the
shirt. I'll make sure to take notice of that next time.
So if you see that logo, then you know for sure that you know we've been in there and our teams have been supporting them. But there's also things behind the scenes. We we do and have one of the most industry leading commerce platforms that support the retail stores. We've been investing in for years, so we have a huge development team. And then on top of the hardware and the software, one example I can give you because we've shared it publicly before is Walgreens, which in the U.S. has over 9,000 store locations. We actually maintain all those stores. So all the technology in those stores across 9,000 stores is Toshiba that runs and supports that. So, you know, all elements of making these stores operate efficiently and helping them do what they do best, which is be a good retailer that, you know, excels in providing goods and services in their community. And that's back to the why, right? The why to these retailers is, you know, they deliver essential services in a lot of cases, food, medicine, or they bring joy to communities when you buy something fun or you go Christmas shopping or holiday shopping. And they also provide jobs, of course, you know, which are core to the economy. And so when you put all those elements in place, you know, we feel pretty proud of, you know, being there working with some of those great retailers out there.
So working with the great retailers is a really great thing, I think, for a lot of candidates. But how about for those who want to understand the next step? So what does it mean? What's the positive impact, I guess, on society when you get to work with the biggest retailers, you know, through the technology that you've got?
Yeah, well, I mean, the retailers themselves, as I said, they provide a lot of the essential services and things that we need in our economy. And so obviously there's a great pride that we take in allowing them to do that and be so successful. You know, the other part of working at a company like ours is that we're often on the really, you know, front edge of innovation and, you know, new innovative investments that we're making and how computer vision and artificial intelligence are playing a role in, you know, doing even more and understanding the data and the insights that you get from what's happening in retail and connecting the experience that consumers have, regardless of how they shop with a particular brand. So there's a tremendous amount of you know, excitement and how that technology really is going to lead to the next generation and understanding of delivering even better customer experiences and allowing our clients to operate, you know, with excellence.
It's great that you touched upon AI because that's something I really wanted to ask in this interview. So obviously AI is blowing up with ChatGPT. How is MarTech and AI impacting your organization? Is it impacting it in a big way, or are you still maybe more conservative about investing in AI?
Yeah. So when we think about AI, there's two sides to it. There's the how we embed the technology and the solutions that we then you know, offer to our clients. And there's some really interesting use cases in that. How we use it internally, I think we're just scratching the surface, of course. I mean, it's a lot of people like us are exploring different individual use cases. We are at this stage being probably a little bit more on the looking at our internal data. You know, what do we already have access to? How do we use AI to better understand and leverage the insights or the knowledge that we have? And then how do you slowly start to expose that externally, maybe for how you deliver a web experience or, you know, things of that nature. So, you know, we're, I think like most, we're probably a little bit more on the early stage of just ensuring that we take precaution to do it in an, in a rational, understandable, ethical way. But, and there is so much opportunity and, you know, marketing is all about, to me, it's science and art, right? It's the combination of both. And, you know, if anything, Gen AI is really that, the true combination of data and art, and how would you use it? How does it become a tool that helps you going forward? I think we're on a fascinating journey on that.
So how is AI impacting how you position your brand, or is it impacting your brand positioning at all in the next few years?
Yeah, externally it is for sure. You know, we, given that we're in the retail industry, you know, we, one of the things we talk about is that we put the AI in retail, right? We're, you know, it's gonna play a really critical role. I mean, right now we're using it for solutions that are around loss prevention. You know, you see a lot of shrink in the retail industry and that challenge. We're spending a lot on that computer vision AI. Learning so that we can understand consumer behaviors and patterns in a way that, you know, helps retailers manage that that challenge. But there's so much more behind that of utilizing AI to, you know, better deliver personalized experiences and tailored offers and all kinds of new things that are going to be coming out. But again, you have to do that if you're going to get to an individual consumer level. From a brand standpoint, you have to make sure that you do that in a way that respects privacy and the ethical side of it. And, you know, that's a key part of our brand. And we're never going to, you know, do anything that's going to have any negative impact on that.
So moving on to talk a little bit about maybe your role, you know, in such a big company, being the head of marketing as in a VP level, I don't think it's an easy job. So can you tell us, what's the most challenging aspects of your role, you think, and the most interesting ones?
Yeah, you know, when you're in a position that I'm fortunate to have, you know, then a lot of the time, what I think about day to day is around how do you inspire your team? How do you remove roadblocks, right, that the teams have so they can execute efficiently? You know, those are, you know, two of the key things that I think about day to day. And then, of course, you know, I work very closely with the other executive team members and alignment around strategy and direction and what we need to do as a business. Marketing is really not, you know, as efficient or as powerful it can be if it's a standalone entity just executing its own activities, right? So, you know, one of my favorite acronyms that I saw recently at a convention was SMART, standing for Sales and Marketing Accelerate Retail or Revenue Together. Right? I mean,
that's so, a great one.
But it's, you know, that example of we have to continue to work together to make sure that we know what we're doing, why we're doing it, and it's one of the key questions or perspectives that I know my team and others appreciate the most is, what's the context behind why we're doing something? I don't want to just execute, even down to, you know, if it's a white paper or a webinar like this or something else, why are we doing it? What's the context? What are we trying to accomplish with it? And so, you know, I see my job as really the combination of those things.
So moving on to the last section of the interview, I'd like to know more about, you know, the meaning of your work, because obviously that's the title of the podcast. So can you tell us, over your long career, how do you stay motivated? How do you find meaning in work aside from, you know, a paycheck at the end of every month?
Yeah, well, I think that's where you have to keep the outside in perspective. You know, so there's two parts. I think one is you have to always keep in mind why you're doing this. And if you lose the sense of purpose and you lose the sense of why, it gets much more difficult. But when you lead an organization like I do, then almost every day it's about the people, and you know, people first, right? So what does the team need? What information, what context, what tools, what resources, what processes do we need to update, right? So how do we, and how does my management team, how do we focus on, you know, getting the teams as efficient as we can be? And that's, you know, it's a continuous process. It rarely is it a destination, but it's a journey and of continuous improvement in that. So, you know, that's and that's motivating, because if it's a continuous journey, you're never going to reach the end. Then every day you're going to wake up thinking about, well, what could we do better today? What could we do better next week? But you still got to keep up. You got to balance that with some stability too, right? So you create some stability, some clarity, but then always push for what's next. What can we do differently? How can we do things better?
So for candidates who might be stuck in a job they don't want, or are thinking of, you know, what industry to get in, what kind of career advice can you give them based on your experience?
To get into a marketing
maybe,
leadership role?
Maybe in marketing, or maybe just in any industry in general, like what's the deciding factors that you can think of?
Yeah, you know, and sometimes to your point on retail, not everybody who joins our company has a deep understanding of the retail industry. And you know, that's, in some roles, it's maybe more important than in others. But a lot of that can be learned, right? One of the things that we talk about in our values around leadership, actually, we define that as encouraging and cultivating employees who can get the most out of the passion, knowledge, and experience that they bring to the table, right? And so, you know, you can have passion, right? You can gain knowledge, right? Or you may have already come with experience, but you know, either way, the combination of those three, I think, is really important as we look at, you know, the type of people that, you know, may join our company. And you know, beyond that, there's some of those other soft skills. And because a lot of times you can learn the industry side of it, but can you demonstrate the passion? Can you demonstrate why you're interested in a particular field? Do you understand that why? The functional skills, a lot of times you can, in the industry knowledge, you can sometimes learn on the job, if you will.
Well, it's been a great interview. I thought I learned a lot from you. I hope, you know, listeners took a lot out of it. So thanks again, Frederick, for coming to the interview, and wish you all the best.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the time. Glad to be here.